Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into Preds Insiders here on this Monday evening. ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. I'm your host, Ryan Porth, here with you for another hour of Preds talk and NHL talk as the two sides, NHL and NHLPA, try to get things on track to play a 2021 season, hopefully starting sometime in January. The target date, still January 1. We will see if that actually happens. Hal Gill is going to be joining me here momentarily. He has a unique perspective on negotiations between the National Hockey League and the NHLPA as someone who played through two lockouts. So interested to get Hal's perspective on everything going on in the NHL right now. And then JP Dumont later on in the program, as we have an exciting broadcast presentation Wednesday night, NBA versus Father Ryan, coverage starting at 7 o'clock, puck drop at 7:30. Fun night for the high school kids. NBA versus Father Ryan, you'll be able to hear it on 102.5 The Game with Pete Weber and Hal Gill on the call, as if it's a Nashville Predators game, live from Fordyce Center in Bellevue. Speaking of Hal Gill, he now joins us here on Preds Insiders, friend of the show and also radio analyst for the Nashville Predators. Hal, how is it going? It has been at least 1 minute, if not 2 minutes, since we've had you on Preds Insiders.
I know. It's been hard without hockey, and now we got snow and December's right around the corner. It's like, this is hockey time. We're supposed to be in full swing. So nice to talk to you, though, and hopefully we'll get some hockey soon.
Yeah, I kind of feel like tonight I should go put together a pot of chili and then turn on a hockey game. And we don't have that because, you know, 2020.
That's exactly right. And hopefully in the new year we have hockey. You can sit down on a nice, cool winter's night and watch some hockey. But we'll see. There's a lot that needs to be done before then.
Exactly. So let's start there. You know, it felt like a couple or two, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago that everything was kind of coming to a head, that they were starting to figure out maybe the realignment portion of coming back and some of the on-ice factors. But they have to get to the ice first to return to action. And it's really come out here in the last couple of weeks that the NHL has gone back to the NHLPA asking for a revision to the CBA that they've already signed, a revision to the 2021 season, especially with deferred payments, asking for more payments to get deferred into a later month or a later year on the calendar. So for you, Hal, as someone who was in the league for a pair of lockouts, unfortunately, back in 2004-05 and then the 2012-13 season as well, how would you feel as a player currently if you were approached by the National Hockey League asking to change an agreement that was already signed and agreed upon back in the summer?
Yeah, it's bizarre, isn't it? It seems like you knew that the NHL would get a worst-case scenario rundown and do their homework and say, all right, if this is worst-case scenario, we do lose a season, what can we afford to do? And that was done not too long ago, right before the bubble started. They settled on that and seemed like it was all pretty easy for the PA and the NHL to work it out. And now the NHL apparently is saying that it doesn't work. So it's peculiar to me. It doesn't make too much sense. I think they may just be leveraging just to grasp at straws to try to lessen the damage that they're going to take throughout this year. I will say, as a player, when we started talking about escrow, it was a while ago, 2012, I guess, 13. We started talking about it, and we said, hey, you know what? We're gonna lose a little bit here or there. We thought it might have been 5%, And now, you know, as it went on, we started looking at 14%. And with COVID coming, who knows what the number was and how much money you're going to lose off of your salary. So to cap it at 20% was really, I think, a huge get for the players. And the players, I'm sure, looked at that and said, all right, I feel good about this because I'm not going to lose more than 20%. And then 10% will be deferred to a later year. And I can handle all that. And now the NHL has come back and said, no, not so fast. We got to rework those numbers. I would be very discouraged if I was a player right now. I think the players deserve the deal that they signed. And really, they put themselves at risk in an unknown world. They put themselves at risk to go into this bubble and play hockey, and they signed that deal to make it happen. So now who knows where we're going to end up. I think there's a lot of talks that need to be had. And it's not just negotiating numbers on escrow and deferrals. It's also what else was in that deal. There's so many different avenues that you can take as players and the PA and NHL and the owners. There's so many different things that they look at when they're doing a CBA. I think you have to revisit all of that, and that's going to take time. So there's not much time. Players want to play. Of course, owners want to have people in seats. But without people in seats, how much money is there to be made, and how willing is the NHL to go back and get it and play some hockey? I'm not sure.
How involved were you back in those two lockouts of 04, 05, and then what you mentioned, 2012, before everything happened? It felt like the stars aligned, and in January 2013, the season was saved, and you had a 48-game season. How involved were you in those discussions?
I was our player's rep for 2000 with the Bruins in 2004. I was very involved in it. I was involved. I wasn't the rep, but I was very involved in the last CBA negotiation. And I feel like it is difficult to be a player because you're being asked, you know, if you own a team and you're the owners, you're asking about a business decision. These are, you know, you're saying, okay, this is good for the business. This is what we're going to do for the business. When you're a player, you're talking about your salary, you know, the business of you and how much money you're going to make. And it was tough to go through those conversations where you're saying, all right, we're going to take a 24% pay cut in order to go and play. And that was just off the top. We took a 24% rollback on our salary, and we did it just so we could play hockey. Now that's a lot of money. If you ask anyone to take 24% of their salary, that's a lot of money that you're giving away. And so it's tough to be in those negotiations knowing that they're going to affect your bottom line and your livelihood and what you do, and a limited time frame. You know, these owners will own their teams for a long time. As a player, you're looking at, what do I have, 5, 10 years, maybe 12? How long am I going to be able to play here?
So let's fast forward to present day now in 2020, and there's, as these discussions are going on about escrow and deferred payments and all of that, there's a pandemic going on where a lot of people, most people in the United States of America, have had some sort of salary cut or have lost their jobs, and they look at discussions like this and the one that occurred with Major League Baseball back in the summer before they finally got their heads out of their rear end and decided to play baseball and actually salvage a 2020 season. And I think a lot of fans don't want to hear anything about this. They don't want to hear that the players and owners are grappling about money. So for you, kind of fairly or unfairly, putting you in the shoe of maybe a present-day NHL player, how much would you try to steer this to make sure that it's all being done privately and you're not letting anything get out to the public because you know what the public perception might be?
Yeah, that's the hard part is, you know, when you're going through these negotiations and you're going through something like this, like, hey, everyone you talk to, when are you going to play? And you hate to say, well, we're arguing over money. That's the last thing you want to say. But at some point, you have to stand up for yourself. And I really don't think this would be a big deal if the CBA wasn't just done. It was just, you know, you say, all right, pandemic is here. We need to get back on hockey. We're going to do this bubble. In order to do this bubble, we really want to have a CBA in place. And so let's do it. And you look how smoothly it went. I feel like the players said, okay, we're going to give on this and we're going to do this knowing that the CBA is in place. And for the owners to question that now is tough. Now, I understand where the owners are coming from. This is unprecedented times, and no one wants to be going through this right now. And it's very unsure, and who knows what's down the road. It's got to be frustrating for the owners, just as the same way as it is for the players. But the negotiation was just had just happened, so I feel like it's got to be that much more kind of in your face as a player. You know, like, wait a second, now you're just bullying, you know? And that's the way a lot of it feels when you're a player is, you know, I only have a certain amount of time I can play hockey. Don't take away a year from me. Don't take this away from me. Don't take away my money to try to make this work, you know? And so I think there's got to be a middle ground that they can reach, but I would be pretty frustrated if I was a player. We just did the CBA, and now they want to revisit it.
We're going to hit pause on this conversation with Hal Gill, Preds radio analyst, and continue the conversation on the other side. This was part one of my conversation with Hal Gill. Coming up next is part two. You're listening to Preds Insiders on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday evening. Don't forget, coming up at the top of the hour, it is the Commodore Hour. Lots of news over there on West End. Joe Fisher has the Commodore Hour coming up at 7 p.m. right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Last segment, you heard part one of my conversation with Hal Gill, Preds radio analyst, talking about everything going on with the NHL and the NHLPA. Here is part two as we look ahead to the upcoming season. So Hal, looking back at the fall of 2012, all of this was going on between the NHL and the NHLPA. There was a lot of ominous clouds in that fall towards whether or not a season would actually happen. And I remember you and Chris Mason and others were working out at A-Game Sportsplex in Cool Springs, just trying to, I guess, stay loose and stay in shape for whenever the moment came that you guys were going to be playing NHL regular season hockey. But you didn't have any sort of end date on it. What was that like preparing for a season without a clear schedule of knowing, all right, training camp starts here and the regular season starts here?
That was tough. It is a tough situation. And what the guys are going through now, I believe most of the guys are back in town and playing and getting ready. I'm sure they're sitting there going, all right, I feel good. I don't want to peak too early. I don't want to get too jacked up, but I really got to get going. And it kind of tinkers with your head with an uncertain date. I know when we were playing at a game, I came out gangbusters. I'm like, I'm ready. I'm ready. And then a month went by where I was ready to go. And I was like, I got to back off here. I'm going to be exhausted by the time the season starts. You go out and you skate yourself every day and you try to get ready. And then you say, okay, I got to take some time off. And then you take maybe too much time off. And then you second guess yourself again. It's a mind game just as much as it is a physical game where you want to be ready to play, but you don't want to get yourself to exhaustion, mentally or physically. So yeah, there's a lot of balancing going on. I think you rely on your teammates to have like kind of a structure and say, all right, this is where we're at, and this is where we need to get to. And you take it day by day. But it is frustrating because you are, you know, as a hockey player, you're so much a creature of habit where the season ends, you take 2 weeks off. You go and work out for 2 months. Then you get on the ice. You start with skill sessions, and then you start focusing on your aerobic exercises, and you get your wind under, and you get your legs. And then you get on the ice, and when you hit the ice, you're going hard. It's not just skills anymore. And then you're primed and ready for a season. And when you mess with those that you have, it can leave you in a tailspin. So mentally, I think it's just as frustrating.
So when you look back on that season, did it feel like a real season to you? I mean, you were playing essentially 59% of the regular season before the postseason. Did a 48-game regular season, which is something that we could be seeing here in the 2021 season, whenever it may start next calendar year, did that feel like a real season to you?
Yeah, it did. And then there were times when it was, with a shortened season, you'd say, all right, I got to get my feet under me. All right, the team isn't quite clicking. You know, you're 10 games in. Normally, at 10 games in, you're like, okay, this is what our team is, and we're trying to figure it out. In that situation, is 10 games, you're like, okay, we got to jockey for the playoffs. We better know what we're all about. And I feel like there was a gap that you miss, a gap where you can say, okay, we can retool. Usually that 20 to 30 game mark is where you're saying, all right, we've retooled and we figured things out, and now we're going to get ready for a playoff push. When you don't have that 20 through 30 game mark, it becomes a 40 or 50 game mark. Now you're looking at it going, all right, we missed a step there. So, you got to sort that out pretty quick. I think we had a hard time doing that. I recall that year being frustrating because it was just, I talked about being out of sync before that. I felt like that just continued. It just kept going. And I think for skilled players, they can go out there and rip around and make their plays. It's not going to be as different as a guy like myself that relied on the system and relied on having a good team around me to be successful. I think that it was a different atmosphere for me than for other guys.
Well, you Hal, had all the skills in the world. I mean, your nickname is Skillsy.
Yes, of course.
So
it only makes sense.
So if it was a, let's say, 48, 50, 60 game season for the Nashville Predators, they have made a ton of changes to their roster, especially at forward, in, I guess you could say, the bottom nine outside of that top line with Jofa. How do you feel like that would be for the Nashville Predators, a shortened season with a lot of changes? Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
We'll see. I guess it's hard to say because when I look at this team and I feel like maybe the Preds kind of got into a rut where they were like, all right, this is our top six, maybe interchangeable. Maybe we can throw these guys around and this is our bottom six. And as forwards, we can move those around, but they're going to stay in the top six, bottom six. And now by not having a clear second line, I think you look at DeShane as a guy that's going to need two players to play with him. And I think there's going to be a lot of guys fighting for those spots. So it's going to be a competition like we haven't seen in maybe the last 3 years, 4 years. We haven't seen a competition. It's been, yeah, we're a good team. We're just not clicking. And they go to camp where they say, all right, we're a good team. Now I think they're going into camp saying, I'm going to fight for a spot where, I'm going to make this a good team because I'm going to step up. You go down the lineup and the young guys that want to push themselves in, Tolvanen wants to get in there. Cunning is going to fight for a second line spot. You look at Jakob Trenin, he wants to fight to get in there. Yarncroke, he's saying, I'm due for this. Rocco Grimaldi has worked for it. Nick Cousins wants to come in and make a good impression. Tomasino is a guy who had a great year in the juniors last year. I feel like he's going to get a chance. He's going to fight for a spot. So I feel like you have a lot more competition, which might be exactly what you need coming into what would be a shortened season and a season that's unsure, is you got a bunch of guys that are hungry to prove themselves. And so that's going to be good. And I'm not leaving the Jofa line out of it. I think they have a lot to prove to themselves. I think they had a good playoff or a qualifying round, whatever you call that. I thought they looked good. I think they're hoping that they can carry that on and continue it, but they certainly haven't sealed anything for themselves. So there's going to be a lot of competition. I think that would be good for the Preds.
You lead me right into what I was going to bring up next with the Jofa line, and that's Philip Forsberg. Philip Forsberg came on with Robbie and Rex Rhode last week and just gave an update on how everything's going, his thoughts on the offseason, and Joe Rex Rhode asked him a question of whether Phil has ever thought about breaking down the 40-goal mark for the first time in Nashville Predators history. And I thought Philip had a really interesting response, how I want to play that response for you and then have you react. So here's what Philip Forsberg had to say last week with Robbie and Rex Rhode.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily put up numbers like that. It's a little hard to – I mean, it was one year, I think it was year I had my career high in goals. I was at 4 goals at Christmas, so 30-something was not looking pretty at that point, obviously. But so I think it just the actual numbers are going to put more stuff in your mind that is actually going to help people. Like you said, I see guys that score 40, and I think – personally, I think I'm not worse than those guys, so I definitely see it as a possibility. But at the same time, I haven't proven that yet. So until that moment, I can't say that, yeah, I'm a 40-goal scorer. That's something that you obviously have to earn. But like I said, I believe in myself, and I believe in the team that we have that can achieve that together.
That was Philip Forsberg last week with Robbie and Rex Rhode when asked whether or not he ever thinks about scoring 40 goals in the National Hockey League. Hal, what'd you think of his response?
I love it. I think he's spot on. I think he certainly does have the ability. I love that he believes in himself, but he's also saying, hey, I'm not, no one's just going to give me 40 goals. You know, that's not the way it works. You say, you know, no one says, hey, you're a pretty good player. We think you'll probably be a 40 goal scorer. So here you go. You have to go out there and do it. And I think there's a lot going on. I feel like the way the system was and has been with the Preds, it puts a lot of pressure on forwards. It's not as easy to create as many points just because it was driven from the back end, and you have Josi and Ekholm who usually are pushing through the neutral zone. So there's not as many points to get off the rush. But I feel like Forsberg, and I talked about that playoff, the qualifying round, you could see where he was leaning on pucks and leaning on players, bull rushing the net. I think if you see that internal battle as opposed to the perimeter, you know, there's times when he wows you. Everyone's seen it where he goes and he does these crazy stick handles, but he brings himself into the corner. You know, it's like a great stick. He needs to make those plays and make them towards the net. And he's started to do that at the end of last year and into that qualifying round. And I love that part of his game. And if he can set it, because he is a strong player on his edges, and if he can set that up and get towards the net, I think just by doing that, he might not even get shots, but he's going to get points. He's going to get a lot more respect because he's aggressive. And because of that respect, I think he's going to get a lot more scoring chances. I think guys will back off and give him that shot, and he's got a deadly shot. So there's a lot that goes into it, and I think he's got the right mentality. I do think he is absolutely a 40-goal scorer, so I'm excited to see it come around and see him get on that pace and be consistent with it. And I think when he does that, you know, he brought up another good point. It's the team. The team is going to thrive off of that. I think when he's playing as well as he can and the right way, I think the team kind of follows him. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch when he does come around. But he's got to put in the work. It's not easy. It's not easy to get into the dirty areas and find a way to score goals. And if you force yourself too much, you know, I was never a goal scorer, but I've been around them, and I know they'll force it. And they'll get into their own head, and it's hard. It's such a hard thing to go out and say, I need to score in the NHL. You know, you got to go out there and earn it every night, but you also have to play your game and just go out and let it rip. And I think that's what he can be good at, is just letting it rip. And if he starts to snowball and get his confidence, then I think 40 is an easy number for him.
I think there was a word that you weaved in there that I think is the most important one for him to get to 40, and that's consistency. You know, there have been a lot of stretches in his career where he'll go a month, maybe even 2 months, where he's either forcing it or he's not getting that luck that some other goal scorers might get. And like Phil alluded to in that clip, he's sitting at Christmas with two or three goals, and then he ends the season with 32 or 33 because he goes on a second half rampage. And in that second half, we're always saying, man, what if Philip Forsberg could just do this for the whole season? So I feel like the consistency absolutely has to be there, and also the health. He's missed a lot of time here in the last few seasons with an injury here or there. And to get to 40, obviously, you have to play the bulk of the season to at least sniff 40 unless you're Alex Ovechkin.
Yeah, no, that's – and don't forget, you know, when you get an injury, it doesn't – it's not just, okay, you miss those games. There's a lot of – it's hard to get back, you know. I think he broke his thumb at one point. And if you're a shooter and you're – yeah, your thumb healed – but it changes your shot. You know, like you have to relearn, teach yourself to shoot. You're not just, hey, I'm healthy and I'm back to 100%. You got to go through things. And there's a lot of injuries that are going to come up that maybe you're banged up, but you're still playing. And so that goes into consistency. But I think in the end, you know, in order to be a consistent goal scorer, you have to have the mindset where you're playing the same way, whether you're getting goals or not. You're playing the same way, and that's, you know, like I talked about, bull rushing the net, creating scoring chances. If it's not for you, then it's for your teammates. Pushing the defense back, getting heavy in on the forecheck, all those little things that you need to work in, you know, night in and night out. It's not an easy job, but in order to be consistent, you're going to have to ride through those hard times and maybe get a goal off your backside because you're in the crease or you know, pay the price to get off the schneid and then get the confidence going and get back on the horse. And that's hard to turn around sometimes, especially for a guy as skilled as Phil who just wants it to happen for him. And he's doing everything the same way and it's not going in. Well, you got to change it up and be consistent going to the net.
Hal Gill on the line with us here, Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. So, Hal, who does Phil maybe remind you of from someone that you would have played against back in your day?
There's a lot of players. You know, there's just so many skilled players. I feel like it's a tough one to put me on the spot and
Sorry.
Try to think of it because he does have the ability to set an edge. You know, Kovalev used to be a player that I feel like when he turned on, he was one of the deadliest players I've ever played against, and he could turn his edge, and he was physical. You know, of course, Peter Forsberg could set his edge and blow you up and do the reverse hit that he caught me way too many times with and left my face bloody. That reverse hit that Philip does is effective, but he's also got another skill set that with the hands that he has and the way he bobbles the puck and throws it up in the air and stick hands through the air. I guess Korea was kind of one of those guys that did that, the hand-eye coordination. So I feel like Phil is kind of a mixed bag of those players. But, you know, there's certainly it's rare when you see a skilled guy the way he is that can set an edge. And I'd love to see him set his edge more and use that skill when he's charging the net, because that's when it becomes deadly. That's really hard to stop. And that's what makes Phil a special player.
Hal Gill, Preds radio analyst. Last thing for you here. You know, we're talking about what could be with the NHL season, whenever that may start, hopefully in January. But we do have high school hockey action that we will be carrying on Wednesday night here on 102.5 The Game. You and Pete Weber will be on the call for NBA versus Father Ryan. Puck drop shortly after 7:30 p.m. Our coverage starts at 7. I'm sure it will be good for you and Pete to knock off a little bit of the rust and call some hockey, even though it's not NHL action.
Yeah, I'm excited about this. This is going to be fun. You know, I was a high school hockey player myself. I love high school hockey. I love the fact that these kids can go and play for their schools, represent their schools and go out there and play. So, I coached a little bit with Ensworth during the lockout. And so I know a little bit about the G Nash. I think this is going to be a lot of fun. And a couple good coaches out there, and Stevie Henry and JP Dumont. So that's going to be a battle. It's a lot of good storylines. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm excited, like you said, just to get back in the booth with Pete or wherever we are at Ford Ice. It'll be nice to be around hockey and calling a game again.
Very much so. Hal Gill, Preds radio analyst. Hal, can't wait to hear you Wednesday night and that first NHL game for the regular season, whenever that may be.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Hopefully sooner rather than later. I need it.
Amen.
I need it back in my life.
Amen to that. Hal Gill, thank you as always.
Cheers.
Thank you as always to Hal Gill, Preds radio analyst, for joining us here on Preds Insiders this evening. Coming up next, he mentioned J.P. Dumont being the head coach of NBA. J.P. is going to join us coming up next to talk about what it's been like being the head coach of a high school hockey team through a pandemic and to walk down memory lane on a couple memories with the Nashville Predators. That's all coming up next right here on Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders here, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth here with you. As always, Preds Insiders brought to you every Monday by Dr. Kelly Rice for all your dental or sleep apnea needs. Visit KellyERice.com. I am glad to be joined by former Nashville Predators forward J.P. Dumont, now head coach of the Montgomery Bell Academy hockey team. J.P., thank you so much for joining us here this evening.
Thanks for having me.
So, big game coming up Wednesday night for you guys facing off with Father Ryan, a game that you can actually hear on 102.5 The Game, starting at 7:30 p.m. with Pete Weber and Hal Gill on the call. I know on social media, JP, Willie Donick and Chris Mason and Lindsey Rowley are going to be doing almost like a TV broadcast of this game. What does something like this, you know, having a high school hockey game between NBA and Father Ryan, what does this mean to your kids that you get a little bit more of the I guess you could say the platform to play a game not only live streamed on the internet, but you can hear it on radio?
Yeah, definitely going to be something new for all of them. You know, I'm really excited about it. You know, those guys definitely never been part of something like that on the hockey side. You know, obviously, those are student athletes, you know what I mean? So, you know, like they play different sports with the school. So maybe they had, like, you know what I mean, live stream a game before on the internet. I'm not quite sure. But I know this is going to be a big, you know, a big first-time event for a lot of those, you know, kids playing. So it's going to be interesting for both school. It's going to be interesting for GNash. Obviously, like you can tell that, you know what I mean, like people in Nashville are missing hockey. You know, like we want the Preds back. But right now, like I said, this is going to be definitely a great experience for those kids.
So, JP, you were introduced as the head coach of NBA back in August. And you're about 10 games into the season now. And I'm sure back in August you knew that there was going to be some sort of limitations with the season because of everything going on with the pandemic. But now that you're 10 games into this and you've experienced it firsthand, what has it been like coaching a high school hockey team through a pandemic?
Well, there's some challenges, obviously. You know, I mean, like the first few practices we had when I took over, for example, you know, we were not allowed to do any, you know, one-on-one battle or, like, you know what I mean? Like, we have to make sure that the players stay 6 feet apart on the ice waiting into as well. Like, you know what I mean? So there was a lot of just a lot of skill work and stuff like that. So, you know, I was lucky to come to a team, though, that, you know, has been well coached in a year past as well. So they were structured there already. So that was an easy fit. But, you know, challenges like in anything else, you know what I mean? Like the way we able to practice, you know, video or even meet before games and stuff like that. Everything is short. You know what I mean? We don't want to be all gather all around for too long. And we got lucky enough, right? You know what I mean? Like you look at like other states, other facilities around the United States that, you know, are closed right now. We don't let anybody be on the ice. And, you know, I mean, like what Ford at Bellevue and Antioch and Centennial, you know, their policy to make sure that they can stay open and, you know, at the same time be a safe place for the kids to play hockey. So, you know, we're really fortunate for that. But, you know, like I mentioned, you know, we had some challenges, but like, you know, like at the end, we're still on the ice playing hockey. So that's definitely a big win.
With the challenges that you speak of, I'm sure that adds a lot of additional stress to the everyday job of coaching a high school hockey team, and probably adds stress to the kids as well, you know, for them making sure that they're following all the right protocols and all the right guidelines. Do you almost have to play not only hockey coach for these kids, but also therapist just to keep their minds right on the game and keep them level headed and not get too caught up in everything going on in the pandemic?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, like I said, like, you know, I'm pretty sure that all the GNASH teams are on the same boat, you know, and that, you know what I mean? Like, it's, you know, the schools are really involved. And like, you know, for myself right now with NBA is, you know what I mean? Like, those kids are surrounded by people that, you know, to help them in whatever they have to face. So, like, you know what I mean? Like, this program is well-oriented, you know, making sure that every player and every family, you know, I mean, members know that their kids are safe. So, you know, but obviously, like, you know, if some people are not comfortable, you know, I mean, like, you know, there's a lot of people that they can talk to, help out, or, you know, help make a decision regarding, you know, what everything is going on. But obviously, like I said, you know, I mean, coaching with a mask, you know, I mean, like, it's some challenges, you know. Some of the players have a hard time hearing us when we talk and stuff like that. But this is, like I said, right? You know, I mean, those are challenges that, you know what I mean, like, I'll take any day as right now during a pandemic that allow the kids and the players to be on the ice. So, but you know, those little things like that, you know, we well aware of that now. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I think it's not, like I said, I don't want to say that we're used to it now, you know what I mean? Because those, you know, like, it's definitely a rough time for everyone. But like I said, like, we get the best out of it, you know what I mean? Like, we try to get all there and have fun and play some hockey.
Former Nashville Predator and current NBA hockey coach JP Dumont on the line with us, Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. JP, before you were named hockey coach of NBA, you alluded to the fact that you've spent a lot of time in the GNASH program and the youth hockey here in Nashville. What would you say the improvement level has been with youth hockey in this area since you played for the Predators 10, 12 years ago?
Well, obviously, like, you know, the success of the Preds has a lot to do with it. You know what I mean? Like, when I got here, like, the teams, you know what I mean? Like, the hockey team has been in Nashville for a while, you know, having some really good team, don't get me wrong, but like, you know what I mean, like, I really believe that, you know, even after I was done, like, you know, like, the Preds going to the Stanley Cup final, really, you see a big rise of younger kids who want to play hockey. You know, I mean, like, early on in my career, like, you know, when I got to Nashville and tried to help out with youth hockey during when I was still playing, going on the ice, you can tell that there was a, you know, the parity was right there. There was, like, you know, there's kids coming from out of town, you know, with parents, you know, moving, you know, with, like, you know, with their job and coming in from, like, Michigan or, like, you know, Chicago, and those kids been playing hockey for a few years and coming here, and, you know what I mean? And you had that that Nashville kid born and raised, having a hard time standing on his skate, you know what I mean? And now it's like, you go up on the ice, you know what I mean? Like, in kids, young age, they're skating. You know what I mean? Like, they're skating already. Like, you know what I mean? They're holding their stick the right way. You know, there's a lot of good stuff happening. It's just like I said, the involvement with the Preds. And obviously, like I said, you know, the kids watching the Preds and want to be, you know, play for the Preds one day. So it's definitely helping the market and definitely helping growing hockey, youth hockey in Nashville.
So back in August of 2006, after the Buffalo Sabres rejected your arbitration award, you became a free agent and then signed a two-year deal with the Nashville Predators. Did you ever imagine back in August of 2006 that you'd be sitting here in Nashville in November of 2020 coaching high school hockey?
No, definitely not. You know what I mean? Like, after a few months in Nashville, you know, I mean, my wife and I, and like, we knew that we were going to be here. Like, we just fell in love with Nashville. And, you know, we knew that it was a great place to raise our kids, and something that, you know, we're still so happy with that decision. Raising four daughters in Nashville, I think, is the best place to do so. And, you know, for me, it's more just to give it back and just still being around hockey, be able to be on the ice and, you know, help grow hockey in Nashville is definitely something that, you know, I do it with a lot of excitement. I'm really happy that I can help that way.
JP, you spent five seasons with the Nashville Predators. What are one or two memories that will always stick with you when you think back on your time with the Preds?
Oh, well, you know, there's a lot, you know, obviously, like, you know, like, especially now looking back, you know what I mean, like, where, like, you know what I mean, like, how the hockey, you know, like, the play, like, I will say, like, the fans in Nashville, you know what I mean, like, they're becoming, you know, huge hockey fans, and I'm not saying that, like, you know, to be disrespectful, but I thought when I got here, I think, you know, the fans were Predators fans, you know what I mean, like, the Predators was playing hockey, you know what I mean? They were there to support the Preds, but now, like, I really believe that there's more and more of hockey fans, you know what I mean? Like, really falling in love with the game. So, like, you know, this is definitely a plus. But for my hockey career, though, like, I remember that game with, you know, that first ever timeout blowout, you know what I mean? Like, been on the bench and during the TV timeout, and the crowd stand up and start just screaming, and you know what I mean, like, and everybody jumped in and it was like so loud, and that was definitely something special, just to show, like, you know what I mean, like I said, right, you know what I mean, like, the fans in Nashville, they always been tremendous, they always been behind the team, but that special night was pretty awesome.
Let's go back to that night with that first ever TV timeout standing ovation. I remember sitting up in section 326 with my dad, and we're waving the T-shirt giveaway that the Predators had for the fans that night in the final, I believe it was the final home game of the season. You guys are on the cusp of making it to the playoffs, and you guys are holding on to this one goal lead against the Blues, and just out of nowhere, this happens with the entire crowd giving you guys a standing ovation, trying to push you guys to the finish line to get those two vital points in the standings at that time in the regular season. And for anyone listening, this is also the regular season where you guys went through a lot of turmoil in the offseason prior, where you didn't know if you were going to be playing in Nashville or another city for that 07-08 season. And it was almost like this galvanizing moment between the Nashville Predators and its fans of, we're not letting go of this team. We're going to push these guys to the finish line. We're going to make it to the playoffs. That's what it felt like in the crowd that night. And looking back on that night, what, do you have some of the same feelings towards what that moment was like for you guys on the bench?
Oh, definitely. You know what I mean? Like I said, like, all year long, you know what I mean? Like, as players, like, you know, our main focus is, like, you know what I mean, to make sure that we perform and, you know, we go win hockey games. But in the same time, you know, we're aware of what's going on around us, meaning that, you know, we were aware of all those rumors about, you know what I mean, like, the team moving, you know, like, to Kansas or even, like, to Hamilton, you know what I mean? Like, there were so many rumors, you know what I mean? Like, things going on, right? You know what I mean? Like, so, obviously, like, you know what I mean, like, we, you know, a lot of guys were there for a few more years than I was, but, like, right away, like, you know, like, I was like, you know, I don't want to leave, like, we want to stay here, and you can tell that, you know, the fans felt the same way, you know what I mean, it was, and it was pretty amazing when that happened, you know what I mean, I remember that after the game, like, guys were just talking about, like, are you kidding me, like, you know what I mean, like, all out was that, you know what I mean, like, it was, like, you know, something that all the guys, part of it, and I'm pretty sure that, like you said, right, some of the players of the Blues, I probably remember that night too, because, you know, I mean, like, I remember watching the other bench and, you know, listen, like, you know, watching those players from the Blues, and they were just pretty much in, like, okay, what's going on? You know what I mean? Like, is there somebody famous coming? Like, you know what I mean? What's going on? Why is it, like, you know, why is it so loud during a TV timeout? You know what I mean? So it was definitely, I think that, like, a big rally, you know what I mean? Like, but the message was heard, right? You know what I mean? Like, after that, like, you know, we got lucky, really lucky here in Nashville with, you know, those tremendous people, that group of people from Nashville that got together and, you know, made sure that the team stayed here.
And that would have been April of 2008 when that happened. And who knew? Who would know 12 years later that that would still be a huge thing here in Smashville with the TV timeout standing ovation? Still gives me goosebumps every time thinking back to that moment. And JP, back in those days with the Nashville Predators, there was a saying with this franchise and with that team of, quote, the Predator way with head coach Barry Trotz. And GM David Poile and now head coach John Hines have spoken a lot this offseason about getting back to, quote, the Predator way from, I guess, where the team has gone here in the last couple of years. For you, JP, how would you define the Predator way from your days with the Preds and, I guess, what the current Preds are going to try to get back to?
Well, you know what I mean? Like I said, that's just my point of view personally. You know what I mean? Like, it's so with the Predators way, it was like, obviously, you know, when the Predators came in was in the league in 98, it was not like, you know, what Vegas did. You know what I mean? Like, it was definitely Vegas had a different, you know, different way to pick their team up. You know, the Predators was, you know, was an expansion team. You know what I mean? Like, in you know, the old expansion rules, meaning that, you know what I mean? Like, every team was protecting so many players, you know what I mean? And not to be taking anything away from all those guys in the first few years of the Preds history. But, you know what I mean? Like, those guys were not playing, you know, on the, you know, top six or top 4D or number one goalie. You know what I mean? Like, so those guys had to work, and they were working really hard. And that's where the fans fell in love with hockey here in Nashville. It's like watching those guys work night after night after night after night. And I think that stick, you know what I mean, with the teams, like, you know, the players coming in, and after that, like, you know what I mean, like, you got like a Paul Curry, or like, you know what I mean, like I said, like a Steve Sullivan, you know what I mean, like Jason Arnott, and after that, like, you know, you draft, like, you know what I mean, like those, you know, Shea Weber, you know, David Legault, and all those guys, right? So they kind of been raised, those young kids, like back then, they all been raised in that mentality, like, you know what I mean, like that Preds way, you know what I mean? And I'm not saying we got away with it, you know what I mean? It's just, like I said now, like, you know, Nashville is becoming like a destination, you know what I mean? We'd be able to sign big free agent, and, you know what I mean? Like, and you're looking at, you know, the players coming in, you know, and sometimes, like, you just, you know, going back to the source and says, like, hey, listen, you know what I mean? Like, this city, like, you know, this team, it's always been successful when, you know, we have a combination of both, you know what I mean? So I think that's why, personally, I see it, you know, Predators way. It's like, you know what I mean? Like, battle for every inch on the ice, you know what I mean? Like, everybody has different roles, you know what I mean? Like, in there, as long as everybody do their role, like, you know, the team will be successful. So I think that's how I see it personally.
JP Dumont, former Nashville Predators forward, now head coach of the NBA high school hockey team, and you'll be able to hear NBA versus Father Ryan right here on 102.5 The Game, a special high school hockey presentation with Pete Weber and Hal Gill on the call Wednesday evening, coverage at 7, puck drop around 7:30 p.m. Again, right here on 102.5 The Game. JP, thank you so much for your time and walking down memory lane of your time with the Nashville Predators, and best of luck Wednesday night against Father Ryan.
Thank you so much. Stay safe out there.
Thanks so much to JP Dumont for joining us here on Preds Insiders this evening, as well as Hal Gill earlier in the program. A lot of great analysis from those two. And don't forget, NBA versus Father Ryan, special high school hockey presentation Wednesday night, 7 p.m., puck drop at 7:30 as NBA takes on Father Ryan over at Ford Ice Center in Bellevue. Should be a lot of fun with Pete Weber and Hal Gill on the call. Coming up next, it is the Commodore Hour with Joe Fisher. That's next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.